This is the Talk of Fame Network on SB Nation Radio from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's Clark Judge, Rick Goslin, and Ron Borges.
Well, Ron McDowell not only was one of the best defensive linemen in NFL history, he was one of the most durable. He played 18 years of pro ball from 1961 through 1978, missing only one game in his final 15 seasons, and played 240 contests, which is the fourth most among NFL defensive linemen. Now, along the way, he went from one of the AFL's best defensive linemen during the 1960s to a great defensive end for George Allen's Over the Hill Gang in Washington for seven of the final 8 years of his career, picking up two AFL championships with the Buffalo Bills and starting for the Redskins in Super Bowl VII in the process. But that was then, and this is now, and now Ron has released an anecdote-filled autobiography called The Dancing Bear, My 18 Years in the Trenches of the AFL and NFL, and we are honored to have him here today to talk to us. Ron, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Ron, the first question to me is easy. You were 6'4", 265 pounds, and you once told Hall of Fame safety Kenny Houston that your best move was sucking in your stomach and making opponents miss you. That being the case, how'd you ever get the nickname of the Dancing Bear?
Well, I had to learn it somewhere. I guess I was on the dance floor. But anyway, no, that was kind of, you know, in football, I guess in any sport, if you pick up a nickname, you got to live with it, I guess. And so that was kind of tagged on to me, and I lived with it. You know, it was developed when I was playing with the Redskins, and so they tagged it on to me, like saying he could dance on bars too long or not heat, and he couldn't. I beat him. So he started it. Once he started that, then, you know, you're stuck for things like that.
One of the things that I found very interesting in there was you were talking about negotiating a contract with George Allen, and he put a bunch of incentive clauses in there, which you agreed to, but then you asked him, you wanted to trade your clause for sacks in exchange for him allowing you to move your seat on the team plane so you wouldn't have to sit with Richie Pettibone. Just wondering, what was going on there?
So when we traveled, of course, we flew, and he kept most of the vets, especially the Over the Hill Gang, up front with him. And so we, because that way he had, you know, asked us questions, keep talking to us, keeping us involved in what's going on, even when we're flying and that type of thing. And so he was notorious about not letting anything go by. So he would, yeah, I was sitting with Richie, and Richie was, you know, he always played cards, and he really didn't pay much towards what George was saying. And he would ask me questions, and so I'd have to, you know, of course, Richie was a safety and everything else, not just a defensive line. And so I would try to answer his questions and make him feel like we really knew what we were trying to keep up to and do, and not create any problems or at least get a jump on the opponent, even in the air. So that's basically what that came from. And I told him I couldn't concentrate with him asking Richie the questions all the time. And so that was the end of the question and the seating, and he changed my seat so I could sit in a different location.
Ron, and we're speaking with Ron McDowell on the Talk of Fame Network. But Ron, you as you mentioned, you were with the Cardinals. You were also with the Oilers and Vikings before arriving in Buffalo in 1963. And I know you struggled with migraines and finding the right spot for yourself. But within a year of getting there, you became a starting defensive end on a team that went 12-2 and would win back-to-back AFL titles with really one of the league's greatest defenses ever. So my question to you is this. What did Lou Saban see in you that the others missed?
Well, when I got there, I'd been passed around so much. I mean, it was in the same year. I mean, basically, When I got the migraine problem with when I was with the Houston Oilers, and that's when I'd been passed down from the Cardinals in a sense. Pop Ivy, back then Pop Ivy came out of the Canadian League and was the coach for the Cardinals. And also we had a few ball players, and our quarterback was from the Canadian League. But I got along with them good because I could play both pretty well, all the positions on the line. I played them one time or another in a whole career. And so I was able to pretty well play everywhere. And we really had a lot of injuries that year. We lost a lot of players. And so I ended up playing a lot of different positions, you know, on the offensive line and defensive line. And, of course, Pop and Cannon and everything else. And we had a lot of plays that were similar from the Canadian League that we could use. And that worked out all right for me. But then I made it through the year. And then the following year, I got him to release me. I think it was about 4 weeks or 5 weeks into the season. And that was really kind of a confusing time anyway. And so I finally got released, and the Vikings then were trying to build their team. They were a new team in the league. And so they didn't draft me. They called me up, and Vanda talked me into signing a contract with them. And I told them about what had happened, and I've gone through all the examinations, and basically I was getting blackballed. Everybody's afraid to touch me. They thought that I'd sue them and all that kind of thing, and just type of thing. And so eventually, when I was with Houston, I played there about 5 games, and Pop Police got them to release me so I could play somewhere. And so that's kind of how I got away from both leagues, in a sense. It was quite an experience time because I didn't realize that, you know, that would happen. And I didn't realize how I could get kind of shoveled out of the league. But yeah, it did. So,
well, obviously, when you landed in Buffalo, you had great experiences there. But in 1971, you end up with the Redskins with George Allen and the Over the Hill Gang. And unlike most coaches, he loved veterans. The average age of your starting team was 31. I think you were 32 when you got there. What did you sort of make of that whole Over the Hill Gang thing? Did you like it at first, or were you skeptical of what he was doing?
I thought that was one of the biggest breaks of my career was getting to George Allen. Of course, George Allen and Ralph Wilson was the owner of the Buffalo Bills, and he also owned some of the Detroit Lions, I believe. And so I was in a position with some people that they were just looking for talent, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think they played against me before the one time and when I was with Houston. And they were looking for players, and they thought, Lou thought I could play, and I could play some places where he needed players. And they're trying to get players because they're trying to build their team as fast as they could. And that was a great team because we had guys coming in, like Cookie Gilchrist coming out of Canada, or Ernie Worley coming out of Canada. There were some guys coming out of other places, a good athletes. You know, of course, we had Jack Kemp, who was a good friend of mine. He's a quarterback. And so we were really developing a team, and then we had the four guys up front. That's a tragic thing. But that was Tom Sestak, probably one of the greatest tackles ever played in the game, defensive tackles. And Jim Dunaway down there in Mississippi. And then there was me. I was playing the other end. And then Tom Day, who was, I think he was in Arkansas. And so we were the front four that went for 17 straight games without anybody scoring us on the ground. And that still hasn't been beaten. Probably never will be beaten. And
I'd like to ask you for a minute, though, about George Allen, because you know, he's one of the great coaching figures. He had that over the hill formula of using older veterans. You guys got to Super Bowl VII playing for him. What was different about him and all the other coaches that you had?
Well, he, of course, I'd never met him or anything. I played against him. We played against him twice, I think, when he was at the Rams. And then I was excited about the fact that I was getting old. I knew that I wasn't going to be able to stay there forever, anywhere in forever, I guess. And so even though I was accomplishing some things, and so I thought, well, this is a great break. Well, then when Ralph Wilson hired the Oakland coach and brought him in, that kind of screwed his team up. And so that's when it started breaking down. He wrote a big article about me, about I wasn't good enough to play for him and stuff like that. And so Wilson called me, and I talked to him. He called me off, and he says, he'd written some articles about me in the paper saying I wasn't good enough to play for them.
Right.
And Wilson said, you're good enough to play for me. You played great for me all these years. And he said, I'm really worried about the situation. I think I've made a mistake. I'm going to get out of this mistake as best as I can and as quick as I can. And he says, I got George Allen calling me. He said, I got George Allen calling me every morning, tonight, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, trying to trade for you and get some drummers. And he said, I haven't. I know that you're a little older now, and I know you're probably, I'm worried about the fact that we're going to start hitting the skids here. And if we do, you're going to be under jeopardy also because of the situation when we bring in different coaches. So he said, what I want to do is, he wants several draft choices. I'm going to trade you to him because that'll really help your career. And I said, well, I really appreciate it. So that's what he did. He traded me, and I knew very well of it. And even afterwards, we talked about it. And it was the big thing. So when I got with George, I really wanted to be there. It was a type of coach that listened to us. He knew what we were doing. He was a defensive coach, and that's what we were, defensive players, and we knew how. And then we had so many guys that came with us. You had to be over 30-something to be in the Overhill gang, so most of us were defensive players. And so it made a great combination.
You also intercepted a lot of passes. I mean, I believe you got 12 interceptions, which is a record for a defensive lineman. How in the hell did you intercept 12 passes?
Well, actually, I had 13. the one that I intercepted in the holograms and playing the Jets at the end of the 1 year. Anyway, that's not that big of a point. But I got paid very well for those. And so George he was giving me around $4,000 or $5,000 for every interception. But it was something I got a knack at doing and was able to work it out. And, type of thing, and that's fine. So that was a big help. And then, so that really made it better.
Yeah.
Because you can make some money.
Ryan, excuse me. Yeah. We got to run here, but I want to thank you so much for joining our Over the Hill gang, and best of luck with your book.
Great, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Ron.
That was former defensive lineman Ron McDowell. Up next, it's the 2-Minute Drill. You're listening to the Talk of Fame Network.